getting lonely, getting old. Can you feel me? Hey, you, standing in the aisles with itchy feet and fainting smiles. Can you feel me?
David Gilmour was at the United Center tonight. Good morning, everybody. Matt Pabala with you on Radio 720 WGN. We're going to talk more with Roger about everything going on the roads, but I'm also curious if anybody got to go see David Gilmour of Pink Floyd fame at the United Center tonight. 312-981-7200. Love to hear how that was. Actually, I had tickets to it, Roger, and didn't end up going.
Well, you had to work tonight, but the concert would have been over long before.
It would have been, and I should have gone, I guess, but my feeling was it's tough to go to work after doing something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to be up early tomorrow, and I'm getting older. But here's the thing that kills me about it. So 2 years ago, I think it was about 2 years ago, Roger Waters came to Wrigley Field to play The Wall in its entirety.
I remember that, yeah.
So for Grandpa Henry, for the kid's grandpa, who, you know, is of that era and loves that stuff, We bought him two tickets to the concert, thinking Grandpa would say, "Hey, man, why don't you come with me?" Grandpa never said this, so I never got to go. He went with a friend. So this year for Christmas, we got him these David Gilmour tickets.
Sweet.
And I said, "I've gotten us two tickets," and I just laid it out.
Yeah.
"I'm going with you."
Subtle hint.
"We're going to the show together. That is your ticket. This is my ticket."
Yeah.
And then as it got closer and closer, and Colleen's like, "You're really going to go to a concert and go to work?" And I was like, "Oh." And so tonight, when, you know, just like half an hour before we're going to go, I called him. I said, "You know what? Why don't you find, is there somebody else to go with you? Because I got to work tonight. And I'm too old. So I'm bummed. But if anybody was there, still heading home, and you might be still heading home, I don't know what time the show ended, but with how bad traffic is tonight, 312-981-7200, if anybody's out there.
And hopefully they weren't on the Eisenhower.
Roger, I'll tell you what. I'm driving in tonight, and I'm hearing you do a traffic report. I'm thinking, what the hell is wrong with Roger? It's not that bad outside. Mm-hmm. I saw more emergency vehicles on my way down here tonight than in, you know, I've been, I don't know, 3 years now. I think we've been doing this overnight show. Yeah. I've never seen anything like this. And so I'm driving, and you're announcing a bunch of stuff out by my area, way out in the western burbs at first. Mm-hmm. And on the, like, frontage road that leads towards the Sears Center, but I think it was more by 59. Did you say something about Route 59 and 90 tonight?
I may have earlier, yeah.
There were like 8 emergency vehicles there and just stuff everywhere. And a lot of what it seemed like you were saying was roads closed. Was that always due to an accident, or sometimes there was black ice and they just said, "You know what, let's shut this down before something bad happens"?
It was mainly due to the road conditions. I think there would be an accident reported. They would go out to it, notice how horrible the roads were, even if traffic was getting by, and then just say, "You know, this is way too dangerous. Let's shut this section down," and people find some way around it. The problem is, since no city is doing snow plowing or salting or anything, you know, springtime, and they put everything away, you've got bad roads all over the place now. So the alternates may not be much better than the main roads you took, except for the lower speed limits making you go slower.
See, this is interesting. So nobody was out salting tonight that you know of?
We haven't gotten any words at all from anyone. We've gotten no notices from any of the cities. Usually, City of Chicago will put out a notice saying snow plows are out or we're salting this much. And I didn't see anything.
Yeah, I didn't notice it either, but I guess now it makes sense why there would be such problems, because it's one of those, as Elliot was saying, you know, it gets warm, and then it gets cold, and then it snows, and then it's warm, and then it freezes.
Well, see, last week and the week before the city sent out notices, they had totally changed over their fleet from snow to warmer weather. They put out notices that they were not only starting street cleaning early, but they were starting street paving earlier than usual.
Right.
And so when you switch over, when you take the plows off of all the plow trucks, and most of the plow trucks are actually garbage trucks with plows, and they have some dump trucks with the salt spreader attachments with the plows on it, they take all that off, and they use that stuff for summertime activities. So nothing is set up for the winter or for something like this at this time of the year. So it's frustrating, and I can understand. Usually, when I come on to start doing the regular newscast at 12:30, even on a Friday night, even with the Gilmore concert or a sporting event in town or something like that, traffic is extremely light. I see no delays whatsoever. You're going to see an accident or two because people are out drinking or trying to race or whatever. But nothing like tonight. You heard me on the last one. I'm clicking and clicking and clicking because there's so much red all over the place.
Yeah, it's crazy out there. I mean, you're right, except for the occasional wrong way driver, which we get all too often. Usually these overnights, the traffic reports are pretty light. But it is a different night tonight. So if you're out there driving, please be very careful. Take your time. Call your airline first. All of those usual things.
And if you're home waiting for someone to get home.
Yeah.
Please understand this is why.
And tell them to be careful and take their time.
Yeah.
And if you're still out doing things that you are about to regret, maybe it's time to say, you know what, let's just call it a night. Let's go home and play some Uno.
Yeah, ooh, haven't played Uno in so long.
Haven't played Uno in a long time either.
Yeah.
We need to play some Uno sometime soon. 312-981-7200 is the number. We actually have a lot of stuff. Shantae has booked a great show for us tonight. Coming up at 2:30, Dr. Brian Russell is going to be on the phone with us. A app called Check On Me. And we're going to find out what this is. You know, as a parent of a young child, Roger, I'm sure there's good and bad to every generation of parenting and what time we parented and what we got to do, what we didn't get to do. For you, your kids were not always available by cell phone, right?
Oh, Dad, no way.
Yeah, so, okay.
No
so that's,
way.
You know, they are my parents.
So we would always say, you know, wherever you go, get on a phone and call us.
Yeah. So like when we snuck out of the house and headed up to, or when we stayed out all night after our hockey team won the Kennedy Cup my senior year in high school, and then four of us drove out to Loras to pick up my girlfriend from college when we were supposed to be at Danny Glover's house, but Danny Glover's parents ended the party early because some kids were out smoking something on the lawn that they shouldn't have been smoking. And instead of going home, we instead drove to Iowa. They had no idea where we were until we showed up back at school 2:30 in the afternoon the next day. That was bad.
Yeah.
Today, our kids would have a cell phone with them, and either we'd know what they're doing, or they would ignore our calls and we'd go even more crazy because now we just think they're dead.
Oh, right. Well, we had that same kind of thing back then. It's like, call us when you get there to let us know you're okay. And they'd never call.
Very frustrating, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. We'd be up all night long. And then, of course, screaming the next day, why did you never call us? I was fine. I was with so-and-so and so-and-so. But we didn't know that.
Well, there's an app now that you can check on people in. We'll find out all about it. It's called Check On Me, and we'll find out all about that coming up at 2:30. At 3:30, Marcus Berkman, as I was mentioning to Patty, wrote this book called Set Phasers to Stun about Star Trek, about the various Star Trek series, but really we're going to talk about the original Star Trek, some of the behind-the-scenes stories, not like stuff like if you wear pointy ears and go out on weekends that you'll be into, but like the rest of us that, you know, sort of watch a show, sort of like it, and some really interesting behind-the-scenes stories about that. And then at 4 o'clock, our old friend, Dr. Jason Steffen, he is an astrophysicist. He's now at UNLV, used to be here at Fermilab. I don't know if you saw this at all this week, but there was a story in the news. It seems somewhat credible. It wasn't really in the news. It was on the internet, but on the news. Like, I saw it on Yahoo. You know, I'm like, oh, it's on Yahoo.
Yeah.
About this planet in our solar system
that
we don't know about.
Yeah.
That could be out there. Now, Jason is finding planets that are habitable millions of light years away.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there's one possibly in our backyard that we don't know about or have seen.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
And now, is that the one that was going to crash into the Earth, or is that the one that was circling behind Pluto?
This is circling behind Pluto.
Okay.
But there was a story. This is why it caught my attention. There was a story that because this thing is in such a wide orbit that when it comes by closest to Earth, it goes through the Kuiper Belt. And then some asteroids get flung out of their orbit and come hurtling towards Earth. And this is why we have extinction events every 20 to 27 million years. And the article went on to say that if they're right, we're going to have one this April.
Oh, stop.
Coming up soon, this will be happening. So, you know, taxes are due in like another week. But if there's all this stuff coming, maybe you file for an extension. And just, you know, kind of play it by ear. Well, think about it. If you wasted your last days on TurboTax, how mad would you be? As you see that thing hurtling toward Earth, I can't believe I wrote that check. I would be ticked. So let's just find out before we all get crazy and start paying off everything. Let's make sure that that's proven. 312-981-7200. Glenn has a road condition update for us. Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, I drive truck, and I was coming up from Munster, and yeah, I saw a couple accidents that way, the ones that you guys reported. But there was a semi off the embankment there. I think it was at 294 to 290 interchange.
Okay.
Complete semi was off the road.
Was it turned over or just pulled over?
No. It was not turned over. It's still on its wheels, but it's off the highway. It's face down in the embankment.
Oof.
Where'd you say again that was?
I think it's the interchange for 294 to 290.
Okay.
The truck's still on its wheels. I don't think the driver's hurt, but I'm sure he's quite embarrassed. But once you get past 90, the roads start drying out northbound, and I'm up here by around Rockland Road right now towards Wisconsin. But
what were you doing in Munster, Glenn?
I was picking up a load of Pepsi to deliver tonight in Kenosha.
Did you sneak a little Three Floyds while you were out there, Glenn?
Say what?
Did you sneak a little Three Floyds to bring back to Wisconsin? Oh, that sounds like pleading the fifth.
Well, maybe it was a fifth.
No.
All right, Glenn.
No,
I'm not saying you were drinking it. That stuff is resale value, Glenn. People out.
I deliver it. I don't drink it.
I know. And that's why I would, if I was heading up to Wisconsin with a load of something, I'd have a little room for some Three Floyds that I could resell when I get up there. You know what I mean? I've got neighbors that kill for Three Floyds. Whenever I'm out visiting my mom in Dyer, I've got to head over to Three Floyds and make a run for people to bring it back.
No. Can't get away with that in this one. But
all right.
Yeah.
All right, Glenn. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it, buddy. Have a great morning.
No problem. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you, sir. You too.
All right.
Yeah, Indiana Road's looking pretty bad. The main ones right now, looking at Klein Avenue, both north and southbound from U.S. 12 to Highway 80, major delays, and the same on 65 all the way from the junction to 90 all the way down south past our map, actually.
Wow.
It's all backed up.
847 texted, just FYI, I drive the overnight, and I've seen several trucks out salting in Oregon, Genoa, DeKalb, Marengo, and Elgin.
Oh, good.
Thank you, David.
Okay.
314 text, I went to Gilmore tonight, driving back to St. Louis now. So he drove up from St. Louis for the David Gilmore concert. So be careful driving back, Kevin. He said, incredible, sublime. Sorrow, High Hopes, and Astronomy Domine were the superb standouts for me. 17th row on floor, dead center. A bucket list concert.
Ugh.
I should have gone.
You're kicking yourself now.
You know what? Because I do love a lot of the 70s rock, and some of these people still tour. It's not the same bands usually, and it's not the same sound, but it's possibly your last chance. McCartney was at Lolla last year. I didn't go see him. I haven't seen McCartney ever. I wish I had.
Yeah.
I really should. I should go see The Boss. I know he's probably still got time left, but I should see him.
Well,
it's frustrating
me. Was it North Carolina now? Because he canceled it.
I know. I think that's very fascinating. All right, one more quick call before we get to the news. Jimmy is on 720 WGN. Good morning, Jimmy.
Hey.
What's going on, bud?
I'm a pizza guy, and I live in Fox Lake, and I live right on Route 59 after it splits off of Route 12. And I deliver, like, Fox Lake, Round Lake area, Haynesville. And when I left on my last run, just before 11, it like everything started to flash freeze. It didn't matter. There was nothing out. It was melting earlier, so they didn't pre-treat or anything. And then it like right about 11, everything away from Lake Michigan started to flash freeze. And luckily I was just like on my last run, took it slow on the way home. But I'm across from the Fox Lake Police Department and the Sea Works and all that. And there's the county and the snow plows. They all have ice stores here. And I saw one state truck go by with a salting, but wow. I'm
the salt spreader on it. Yeah.
I'm looking out on the highway right now and it's shiny. That means it's frozen
still
back
icy,
over.
Yeah. All right, Jimmy, well, be careful. You're done for the evening, right?
Roger?
Yeah.
Hey, I love your last name.
No, thank you.
But I'm a big weather watcher due to Tom Skilling, 25 years. I'm like his unknown understudy.
There you go.
His unknown understudy.
Yeah.
Right outside the Navy base, so it's the same weather as Chicago. But as I moved west, everyone watches the news from Chicago, and like out here by the Chain of Lakes area, we're not Chicago. We don't have that warm. It's warmer in the winter and cooler in the summer. And but like 11 o'clock, stuff started flash freezing out here.
So it's not, you said the snow that kind of blanketed everything started to melt slowly, and then the temperature just dropped and turned everything to black ice.
Well, there was a lot of snow. We had a lot of like whiteout conditions, mm-hmm. like for like 10 or 15 minutes, and then it would let up. But on the pavement, because it's black and the sun, we had sun up until like 6 o'clock, and then it came in from the north like night and day. Mm. It was nice and sunny, mm. and then all of a sudden it's sunny and the 25 mile an hour winds blowing south, and then the clouds, the snow preceded the clouds because it was blowing so hard. So it was bright and sunny, and it's like snowing sideways, and all that stuff melted. And just from the darkness of the pavement and the stored, heat in that from the sun, everything was melting for a long time up until the temperature dropped.
Yeah.
And it was like sheet ice. Even the sidewalks were slippery because same thing. They look wet. But you take two steps, it's better to, deliver my pizzas. It's better to walk in the yard on the grass.
Mm.
Thank you so much for checking in, Jimmy. We really appreciate it. We got to get to the news here in a second. But I guess the main thing is be careful if you're out there. 260, Truck and Phil. I haven't heard from Truck and Phil in forever. He writes, Matt Bubala, now that it is snowing again, 'tis the season to remind Roger Badish to stay off Lakeshore Drive.
It's like the second person who's written something like that.
And then Phil always gives us the countdown. He writes, only 216 days until the 241st Marine Corps birthday, only 258 days until Hanukkah, 259 days until Christmas, and 260 days until Boxing Day in Canada. The Angels in Waiting forgot to put flavoring in God's Slurpee today. He wasn't happy, so he's dumping the plain Slurpee ice down onto Earth. Had snow and Slurpee ice coming out of the sky all day in Indiana, and it's snowing in Fort Wayne at this very moment. All right, Truckin' Phil, keep trucking and stay safe out there. 314, I think it's our friend who's headed back to St. Louis from the concert, writes, by the way, haven't smelled so much nature at a concert since the late 70s. Well, I'm sure that was all medicinal. That's legal here in the state of Illinois now. I'm sure that was all medicinal. A lot of aging people with glaucoma at the David Gilmour concert tonight. Thank you so much, Roger. I mean, the next report's coming up in just 16 minutes. We're halfway there, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, I'm just kind of cleaning the slate.
One of those nights, yeah. I'll tell you about
but
it.
But you know what? I have found over the years that some people may not think that our listeners want to hear that, but I have heard over and over and over, whenever there has been a bad storm, whenever there has been major problems on the roadways, weather related or not, or whether there and when there have been major stories like shootings or plane crashes, stuff like that, our listeners want to know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, listen, when weather's breaking, that's what we end up talking about, and it's as old as time itself, right?
Yeah.
You stick your head out the window and talk to your neighbor about when the world's coming down. And this is crazy time of year and crazy overnight tonight. So we'll keep looking into it, and Roger will keep reporting on it. We were supposed to have our Tri-Cities Little League opening day in the morning. We had a game scheduled for 10 o'clock this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And finally this afternoon, about 4 o'clock, we canceled everything for this weekend because it's insane outside.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, there were twice this week. I canceled three practices this week, I think, for our little league team. And I always waited as long as I could because the weather keeps changing. And so after it had snowed like four times today in West Dundee, I finally sent out the email to everybody saying, okay, we're canceling practice. Honest to God, Roger, I hit send. 4 minutes later, the sun came out. For about an hour, and then snow came back. We have gone back and forth with this snow, sleet, sun insanity so many times recently. So we had to cancel the whole opening weekend, but it's sad because we're having this beautiful reunion tomorrow at our Tri-Cities Fields off Randall Road in West Dundee at noon tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
They're unveiling the Wall of Champions. Tri-Cities, our little league, has been around since 1953.
Wow, the year after I was born.
Yeah. It's been around since then, and
that's
so
great.
We've had all these teams go to sectionals and district champions and a few state champions. In fact, a team my older son was on 2 years ago is the team that lost to Jackie Robinson West for the Illinois State Championship.
Well, how did all that affect their team, though, when all that came down?
Well,
did they move up? Did they get another certificate or something?
We just got our flag. We're the state champs! Woo! Yeah, it really sucks 2 years later being called the state champs, let me tell you, because you didn't win it. You didn't celebrate on the field. You got killed
I know.
Kids who were out of boundaries. And they were great kids and wonderful, and I don't hold anything against them.
Right.
It's the administrators and everybody else who stuck it to everybody. And quite honestly, I don't even feel for our kids. Let's be realistic. Where our kids live, they grow up with a lot of privilege. The kids in the Jackie Robinson West program don't.
Right.
Who I feel bad for, the kids that really got screwed, are the kids that were on that team the year before. When the administrator said, nope, this isn't good enough, let's get outside of our boundaries and bring some other kids in. Those five kids who didn't get to play on that team, which may still have won state, which may still have gone to regionals, and may still have done a lot of that cool stuff, they got ripped off big time. And nobody ever talks about those kids. Those are the kids that should be suing people, not the parents and the administrators that are suing because they got caught cheating and now they feel that they were, I don't even quite understand how to categorize these lawsuits and the asking for reinstatement. It's ridiculous. They cheated. They got caught. The adults did, not the kids. The adults cheated and got caught. And the kids still met the president. The kids still had a beautiful rally in Grant Park. That can never be taken away from them. So this, oh, you did this to our kids, BS, drives me insane. It's what the adults did to the system that, you know, caused all of this. So, anyways, by the way, I need to say hi to a friend. Catherine Boley hopefully is out listening. I was out with her son, Sean, tonight having a beer. And he said, my mom listens to you every night. She always yells at me about things you say on the radio. I said, well, then I will say hi to good old Catherine tonight. She's a wonderful baseball mom who hopefully we'll see in warmer weather all season long out in Tri-Cities.
Now, you should have had the opener today, and I'll tell you why. As you were talking
today?
About, I was thinking, well, you were going to have a
home opener. Saturday. Okay,
or
today.
Saturday.
Okay, we are today. Yes, we should. In the snow.
With the ground frozen like that, sliding into second would be awesome.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
No.
Come on, it's all
like,
ice. It would be like you could start at first
the
and just slide all the way.
It's not ice. It's just hard, muddy,
dirt.
Disgusting dirt.
I know.
Which would feel like sliding on cement,
no.
I think. And, yeah, it's the thing. We can't get the tractors out to turn it over because everything will just sink.
Well, you'd break the plows.
We could. We could. That's true. Everything's going on. Yeah. Right, whatever. We cancel a couple of games. We'll make it up when it's warmer.
Sure.
That's what we'll do.
Yeah.
We should move south is what we should do. Maybe. Something like that. Or build indoor stadiums. I don't know. We're thinking about things. My kids are at that age. I got three 10-year-olds and a 14-year-old. We're always worried or consistently worried about where they are, what they're doing. I'm not worried tonight because Colleen's been texting me. She's actually awake because I've got kids throwing up at home. So look forward to getting home to that in the morning. But if you are worried about your kids or if you're an adult worried about your parents, and a lot of us are in that sandwich generation where we're raising kids and also trying to start keeping an eye on our parents, maybe fully taking care of our parents. I know several friends who have parents who live with them now as they're in their old age. You get worried sometimes when they're out and about checking on them, whether it's the kids or the adults. There's a new app called Check On Me. Dr. Brian Russell is one of the founders of it, and he just sat through all that to join us on the phone. Hey, Dr. Russell, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being patient with us. I apologize about that. We're talking a lot here.
No problem. I'm sitting down here in 70-degree Kansas, so I can't complain.
Jeez. Way to rub it in. Well, good for you. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope we have some of that soon. Tell me a little bit about the Check On Me app, because as I was just mentioning, I've got 10-year-olds. I've got a 14-year-old. The 14-year-old who's in high school is one who's out more when we're not sure where he's at. And a year and a half from now, he'll be driving. And that's what I'm really going to get scared about, because you know how kids are, at least for us. They don't always want to respond. Parents get annoying. We check in too often, and they kind of push us off a little bit or give us these one-word answers, and you get nervous about them. So how does the Check On Me app work?
So the Check On Me app is actually great for people who have kids that are off at college, or they've got parents who they want to check on who don't live with them, people that you don't necessarily have daily contact with, because what this app is going to do is it is going to help you check on your loved ones on a regular basis. You can, not that you're not wanting to have contact, but you can set it and forget it and know that it's going to happen. Even if you get busy, even if you forget, you can be alerted if a loved one's ever in trouble. You can locate the one in trouble. You can notify other loved ones who might be closer geographically to the one who's in trouble. And people can use it to monitor their own safety and tell loved ones when and where their help may be needed. If, for example, they live alone or they travel a lot, and it could be some time go by before somebody would miss them necessarily if they weren't in touch.
Now, I know that for my son, if I said, hey, we're going to put this app on, he'd feel like that was a bit of an invasion. How do you talk to kids when it's kids and say, hey, we want to just throw this on your phone so that if you're ever not, you know, responding or whatever, we can check on where you're at?
Well, here's a great example. A few weeks ago, there was a mom who wrote into an advice column, and she said, hey, I've got a daughter who's living across the country, and I asked her to give me the names and phone numbers of a couple of her friends in case I ever couldn't get in touch with her. I would have somebody to call to see if they'd seen her, see if they knew where she was, so I don't have to get on a plane right away and fly out there and start looking for her, and I wouldn't even know where to begin if I did. And the daughter did not want to give her mother that information. She said, Mom, I don't want you calling my friends. I don't want you checking up on me. This app would be perfect for that family, because what this app is going to do is it's going to make a little pop-up on that girl's phone once a day, and it's just going to say, Mom's checking on you. They can decide what time for it to pop up, and if she just clicks that she's safe, Mom gets a notice. Daughter's safe, that's it for the day. But if the daughter says, I need help, she's got a button she can click for that. Or if she doesn't respond after a set amount of time has passed, the mom's going to get a notice of that, and she's also going to get location data, the last known location that we have for that girl's phone. So she's going to have a place to begin, and she can have other people get that notification too. So if the girl does have a couple of friends that she would like to be notified in that event, when she needs help or she's not responsive, they can set it up to do that.
The last known location that the app knows about on the phone, how updated is that? Is it only when they hit the button or check in, or is it consistently knowing where they are, so it has the last data until the phone was turned off, or what, you know, what's generally going to be the last data point that it has?
That's a great question. It's generally any time they click help. If they get a notification asking if they're okay and they click help, we grab a location immediately, right then. We grab a location the rest of the time, once an hour. And the reason for that is just because if you're grabbing it all the time, you're using a bunch of battery, people don't want it.
And I imagine data too, right?
That's right. And if you're grabbing it less frequently than an hour, then it's a little too stale. So we grab it, we compromise by we grab a location every hour. And so if I send you a notification, ask if you're okay, you don't respond, I'm going to get a notification that says he's not responding, and I'm going to have location data, and it might be, you know, minutes stale, but it's going to give me a good place to start. I'm going to see, as long as your phone's been on, you know, it's not at the bottom of the lake, or you haven't run out of battery or something like that, I'm going to be able to see where you've been in the very recent past.
Well, I'll tell you what I would be doing, Brian, as a young teenager that I was. My parents put this on my phone. I'd say, sure, that sounds great, Mom and Dad. And then I'm heading somewhere I don't want them to know. I would find out a way to shut the app off, or maybe shut my phone off. Is it easy to shut the app? If I'm a kid and I said, fine, you're paying for the phone, I guess you have to do this, can they figure out how to shut it off if they're up to something they don't want Mom and Dad seeing where they were?
Well, they can uninstall it, but you as a parent can also put you can put locks on those kinds of things with your cell phone carrier so that you can control what apps do and don't get installed and uninstalled from your kids' phones. But if they just turn the phone off, for example, then you as the dad are going to get a non-response notification. So you're going to get a notification when the app tries to check on him and he's got his phone off, then he's not going to respond to that check, and you're going to get a notification that he's not responding. And so then you're going to come looking for him, and if you catch up with him and you find out that the reason he didn't respond to the check is because he turned the phone off intentionally, I imagine there are going to be bad times at your house.
Yeah, well, the battery ran out, Dad. I had to shut it down so I could turn it back on to call you when I'm coming home. Oh, listen, Ryan, I've been there before. I can think up a lot of excuses. All right, the Check On Me app, you can find it at checkonmeapp.com. How much does it cost?
So it's free for 2 weeks for everybody, and it's free forever after that for anybody who just wants to be checked on or to be an emergency contact person who gets notified if somebody's ever not responding or they say they're not okay. The only time anybody has to pay is after 2 weeks. If they want to actively check on people, then we've got three different price tiers for Apple, $1.99 a month, $4.99 for 3 months, $9.99 for the year. Two price tiers for Android, $1.99 a month, $9.99 a year. And for that, you can check on up to 10 people a day with an unlimited number of emergency contact people. And so we feel like this is a better deal than what we'd otherwise have to do, which is fill it up with ads. So every time you got a notification, every time you wanted to see a location, you have to see an ad. We'd really prefer not to do that because it is... this is for people's safety. We really don't want you to have to look at an ad to see where your son is.
Yeah, because if people say, oh, let's just turn these notifications off, that's not helping. That's not the point, right?
That's right.
CheckOnMeApp.com. You can download it $9.99 a year for some peace of mind, for whether it's to follow your parents or follow your kids or keep an eye on all of your loved ones. It sounds like a worthwhile thing because it's an era that we get very nervous about people traveling around and being out of contact. We're so used to constant contact. So here's a little peace of mind so you don't drive everybody crazy. Dr. Brian Russell, thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Thank you for having me. CheckOnMeApp.com, everybody.
All right, sounds good. Thank you so much, Brian. .313 in the morning. Matt Bubala with you. Radio 720 WGN. We're live from the Allstate Showcase Studio in the historic Tribune Tower building just across the street from the Wrigley building and our little United Nations plaza full of flags over there. They are flapping pretty good in the wind. The wind is strong out there right now. What's the temperature right now, Raj, out there?
Cold.
Excellent. Thank you.
Along the lakefront, it's a balmy 27.
Yeah.
And we are along the lakefront.
Feels like it sucks outside.
Yeah, that too.
With the feels like of it
actually,
sucks.
Actually, at O'Hare, I haven't wanted to say this, but with the wind gusts, wind chill of, we taking any guesses?
Let's see, is it warmer?
Again, it's 25 at O'Hare.
It is 25
at O'Hare. Yeah, 25 at O'Hare.
Okay. With the wind gusts, it feels like 13.
Bam!
Am I on?
Oh, on the money.
Nice.
Look at you.
Feels like 13. So, yeah, and, you know, 7 hours from now, we should be playing a Little League baseball game. Get that season underway. Yeah. Let's go, kids. Tough it up. The funny thing is, so we canceled the games for tomorrow, so I scheduled practice for 1 o'clock.
You didn't.
Yes, I did.
Oh, God.
Hey, Raj.
I know. You have a championship to maintain.
To defend. In the minors division last year, our Orioles won the championship.
Ooh.
Now we're in the majors division, so we're playing older kids, and we're the Blue Jays.
Okay.
But, you know, we got to defend things.
Of course.
Roger, you don't understand these crazy parents. We've got one of our board members, great guy, Steve Martin. Mm-hmm. Actually, wonderful family. He's kind of loopy. he, last year in the minors division, he was putting shifts on the field. You know what the shift is?
Yes.
When, like, you take the third baseman and put him in right field and leave one whole side. He's got nine-year-olds, and he's instituting a shift.
Smart man.
Well, that's one way to say it. I like to think of him as, did you ever see A Beautiful Mind?
Yes, I did.
Russell Crowe,
wonderful movie
about a guy who's kind of deranged.
Yeah.
Well, my friend Steve reminds me of that, and that I think he has a shed out in the back.
Oh, no.
And he's got, like, the rosters of all the teams and, like, these about 100,000 post-it notes, and he's got every possible scenario for a game. And that's how I think of him.
Yeah, that's a little overboard for a Little League.
Yeah, we call him Super Shift.
Wow. He does that a lot, huh?
I've never seen it yet, but boy, it's legendary when you hear about it. Martin pulled a shift on us the other night, and people were like stunned, like, what is wrong with him? He shifted. So I don't know if it's
they
more of a psychological
thing. They tried to do that, actually,
what he's doing.
When our daughter was in Little League in the
city.
Yeah. It's, well, her team was the team of all the kids who didn't get picked by the other teams.
Oh.
No, because they
that
won the championship.
So sad.
But they won the championship.
Oh, it's a rags to riches tale.
Yeah. And, of course, State Senator Carroll was the sponsor of the team. His daughter was on the same team.
So they bought it? Is that what you're saying?
I don't,
there's like a.
It is Chicago.
Scam
no,
there?
I'm not going to say that. But so it was, I can't remember the ages, but it was small. Five-ish. I would say
there was a championship when they were five?
Yeah.
Wow.
Five or six, something like that.
This is before the days of
participation
trophies, apparently.
And it was co-ed. And so we had a kid on our team who was very tall for his age.
Mm-hmm.
Very tall. Accusations were thrown. And he was our pitcher.
Show me a birth certificate. He's 12. You liars, he's not 5.
And they put the shift on for him.
When he was pitching?
No, when he was hitting. When he was hitting. They would just send everyone over to like center and right.
That is funny.
And it was ridiculous because he would keep hitting home runs. And
shift can't stop that.
No, I remember now that you bring it up.
Wait, this was
that.
A league of 5-year-olds and he's hitting home runs?
Well, he was, I told you, he was tall for his age.
Still.
He was growed up quite a bit. But his parents kept saying, oh, no, he's just big for his age.
Yeah, and when he'd shave and drive to the game, they didn't think anything of it.
Yeah, no, he'd take us out for beers after.
See those home runs I hit? Awesome. I'm the best 5-year-old I know.
Yeah, it was, I saw, yeah, the shift. I sure, try it. Who knows?
Maybe he grew up to be Steve Martin and he's in
there
my league
you go.
Now. What was this
you
kid's
never
name?
Know.
Could be. Could be. Did the Cardinals finally win today? Because this Steve Martin, a friend of mine, is a big Cardinals fan.
Oh.
And he's wearing his Blues sweatshirt tonight when we're all out. And
oh, jeez.
Yeah, no. He's
right,
one of
me,
those.
Let
but,
me look
but
it
his
up.
But his Cardinals were 0-3 to start their season, so.
Yeah. Let me see here. Scores. Let's see here. Yankees losing it. the
but
Mets
Starlin
won.
Castro is off.
Isn't that something?
He was 7-for-12.
Yeah.
Good for him. I mean, we were Colleen.
Well, God bless.
Colleen hated him more than not hated him personally, but hated his style of play for a lot of years, and then really came to love him in the second half last year. The way he handled the demotion, came back, played second base, played a stellar game.
Well, a lot of people just felt that he wasn't mature enough.
He wasn't until the second half of last year, and look at now he's doing now. So good for him. I hope it holds up for him. I hope he has a great year.
Yeah.
Thank God we didn't trade Jorge Soler. Thank God.
Yeah.
Poor Kyle Schwarber. God, that sucks.
And, you know, I've been saying he's on the 14-day disabled list.
The 15-day, which is like the most optimistic disabled list I've ever heard.
Because he's out for the year. Basically.
He's on the 15-day because they don't have the 365-day disabled list in Major League Baseball. They never came up with that. He's on the 365-day disabled list.
Yeah. By the way, Cardinals won.
No, that's fine.
Beat Atlanta 7-4.
They're still 2 games behind the Cubs in the division.
Cubs still 3-1, lead the division, right?
Jerry Lewis turned 90. Who else did
last
you hit
month,
turn
90? Hugh Hefner.
Hugh Hefner.
Can you believe that?
How has he survived?
I don't know.
I will say this
clean
about
living.
Hugh.
How about that?
Yeah, I guess. A lot of disinfectant in that house. The mansion's up for sale. This is the most interesting recent Hugh Hefner stories. The mansion's up for sale, but with the caveat that if you buy it, you got to let him live there.
What?
I don't know if they rent it back from you or how it works, but they're selling the property, sort of like, you know, the Tribune Company has our tower up for sale, not hoping we're all going to move out necessarily, but, you know, they want the money for it, and then we'll lease back. I think it's like a reverse mortgage for Hugh. He can buy the house, but I get to stay here until I die, something along those lines.
Well, doesn't he have to go out to the cabana and live?
To the grotto. I think he's going to stay in the grotto.
The grotto.
So that's going on with Hugh. The magazine shifted to, like you mentioned, the PG-13 content because he can get nudity anywhere these days. So they're going to try something else. I don't know how well that's going to work.
Well, remember when we read it for the articles?
I remember finding a copy in my parents' bedroom when I was like five. And I came running out with it. Mm. And I said to my mom.
Slick move.
I said to my mom, you're in trouble. I guess not fully understanding whose magazine that probably really was. But yes, I'm sure my dad had found a lot of great articles in it.
Oh, Lord.
But here's something good about Hugh. I'm not going to say it's all bad. It's freedom of speech. So the good, sure. He broke barriers, whatever, whatever. Hugh still supports Steinmetz High School's newspaper.
Yeah, I know.
He writes checks all the time. They just got another 5 years of funding this year. After a big scandal there where the kids had written something that the principal and CPS didn't like,
mm-hmm.
and they were threatening to shut the paper down.
Yeah, it was a big story.
But Hugh's keeping it going, so good for him. The part of Playboy that's doing really, really well is the licensing arm.
Mm-hmm. They've always done well with that.
And they're doing more and more with that. They're trying to license more and more.
That's good.
Leverage that. Yeah. By the way, if you go internet... This is an odd thing to switch to here, Roger, so bear with me.
Okay.
But speaking of Playboy, Colleen and I for the last couple of years have gotten to go away to Mexico to a resort for a couple of days.
Yeah.
We'd like to do that every year if we can. If we can afford to, then we will keep doing that forever. And on the cable system there, they have a Playboy channel.
Okay.
And we've never had the Playboy channel here in the States on our cable system. I don't even know that it's offered. I'm assuming it is. I remember, like, back in the 80s, there was, I think, Playboy After Dark. And I don't know what that was on, but right. I think that was a channel available. I don't
know
if
there was a cable channel. I think there was a Playboy channel here in the early days of cable.
And I don't know if that still exists.
And it was a premium channel, from what I understand.
Well, of course it's premium.
Well, So the see, I love these premium channels back in the day before they really figured out the electronics. And it was like scrambled.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
on TV.
Air quotes.
Hey, on TV. I used to sit there with my head cocked sideways watching a lot of nudity.
Exactly. So, what?
Oh, yeah. At night, they'd say, have some movie on. I'd be standing there like that. Like with my neck.
But every so often, the jamming wouldn't work.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Anyway, so I always thought of Playboy, the channel, as sort of like Cinemax. Like, there's going to be nudity, there's going to be nakedness, it's not going to be, oh my God, you know, type stuff. Internationally, it is. It's X-rated.
Oh.
You flip through channel 14 at one of the resorts, you're like, oh, didn't expect to see that coming. It's just a little warning for you.
Yeah, okay. If I ever travel outside the U.S.
If you do, be careful.
Okay.
That Playboy channel is not the homegrown PG-13 thing you might think it is.
I got you.
Might
okay,
you
I'll be ready.
There.
I'll be ready.
I'm here to serve. I'm here to
prepare
and warn everybody.
There
Keep them
go.
Ready for just such thing. Oh, 314, our friend driving back to St. Louis.
Again?
Writes, well, it's a long drive back to St. Louis after the Gilmore concert.
Just be careful. Eyes on the road.
Says DirecTV has multiple Playboy channels.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
I guess I don't have direct. I only
depending
have
on your level of.
I guess there's Playboy, Playboy Plus, and Playboy Ultra After Dark.
Hey.
I suppose I don't know for sure.
Who knows?
So Jerry Lee or not Jerry Lee? Jerry Lewis, not the Jerry Lee. Jerry Lewis turned 90 recently. Hugh Hefner turned 90, and United Airlines turned 90. And I saw some stuff in the news about that this week on one of United's websites. They wrote, when a Swallow aircraft took off from Pasco, Washington on an airmail route bound for Boise, Idaho on April 6, 1926, it marked the beginning of 90 years of aviation first for United Airlines. Since then, United has connected more than 4 billion people to important business meetings, family events, and experiences, blah, 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 blah. Here's some of their innovative firsts over the last 90 years.
Okay.
They created commercial aviation's first flight kitchen. What year do you think they started serving food?
Flight kitchen. So are we saying the flight kitchen that's
here is
that the, makes the food and puts it on the plane?
Created commercial aviation's first flight kitchen.
I
the
would
first
say.
Meal served was a choice of fried chicken or scrambled eggs.
Ooh.
What year do you think they came out with that?
I would say 35.
Wow. 36.
Ooh.
I would have said the 50s. I wouldn't have guessed that early on, only 10 years in after they started with a mail route, they're saying, hey, how about some eggs or fried chicken? Let's see what we can do with this. I think that's pretty cool. Do you remember one of my favorite old, there were a couple old United Airlines commercials that I remember that I love.
Uh-huh.
One was this business meeting and sitting around the table talking about how they lost their biggest client today, our oldest client.
Mm-hmm.
And because we've gotten out of touch, and we're not doing face-to-face. We're not da-da-da-da. We're getting back out in the field. And then the assistant, his assistant has a box of United Airlines plane tickets, and every person in the room is getting handed a ticket. We're all going to see the customers. We're all getting back to face-to-face. We've got to be blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, somebody turns to the boss, says, boss, because he's got a ticket, who are you going to see? I'm going to see that old client. It was just a really cool commercial. Well, it's funny now to see paper tickets handed around because you'd never do that.
There are no paper tickets.
It would be on their app.
Are there?
There are.
Oh, okay.
You can print them out at home,
okay,
or you can print out the pass when you get to the kiosk where you have to self-check in all your baggage.
Wow.
And then there was another one that was great that was, it was like the first commercial flight. So it was a guy driving on some dusty road trying to make it. He's a sales guy trying to make it to a meeting. I don't know what mm-hmm. he was selling, but it's like, you know, in Kansas somewhere, say some dirt farm road, and his car breaks down. And the guy comes out and helps him, and he's looking at it. He says, well, it's going to take a couple of days, blah, 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 blah. And the guy sees out behind the barn out back, there's a little crop duster or whatever. And he says, you fit two on that plane?
Oh, I remember
and
that.
And then the next
yeah.
thing you see is them flying and the guy landing.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, next time you should get coffee. And the guy's like, what? And they're, you know, they're in started commercial aviation was,
right.
the, was the theme of it. It was a beautiful commercial. So 1936, United had commercial aviation's first flight kitchen. They served scrambled eggs or fried chicken, which is interesting. So I'm guessing that was breakfast. I don't know. That's
well,
that's a weird choice. Because not, I mean, fried chicken and waffles I know is a breakfast.
Right.
But scrambled eggs isn't generally a lunch. It's weird to have either or, I think.
Well, it was more like a brunch.
Instituting the industry's first progressive maintenance program that improved efficiency. Today, they have 12,500 technical operations employees located at more than 60 stations around the world. All right, here's an interesting first. They introduced live television to the airline industry in the 1960s. Inside the Boeing 707's in-flight lounge, passengers could sit together and briefly watch live TV while flying over major metropolitan areas. So they must have been able to tune in the over-the-air signals when
wow.
they were passing over a city.
That's cool.
So you probably had a couple minutes of really fuzzy television, and yeah. then you'd be past it. All right, everybody back to your seats. It's
yeah,
over.
Right.
Wichita's coming up in half an hour. We might get something there.
Yeah, but there wasn't. I wonder if they had the TVs that you would hit your head on at every row, or was there
oh,
one
no.
little TV
it was
up
in
at the front?
Yeah, it was in the in-flight lounge, so
yeah,
there's probably
right.
some bar up front that sat three people, and they had a 13-inch black and white, and they had tinfoil all over it trying to get in a signal as they passed over a town. It had to be hilarious. But back at the time, you're like, my God, I'm in an airplane, I'm watching TV, this is the greatest thing ever!
Yeah.
It was very exciting.
Oh,
now,
my gosh.
Now, when I get on a United plane, unless I'm on a really old plane, there is uh-huh. not one television on it. None. Nothing in the seat back, nothing overhead anymore. Nothing at all. The newer planes being
down?
Retrofitted, nothing. Nothing. Unless you're on
mean?
An older plane. Because...
Oh, they have Wi-Fi now. You can.
They have Wi-Fi, and United has instituted. They don't have it in all the planes yet, but this in-flight entertainment system, it's mm-hmm. actually very cool. So you download the latest United app,
mm-hmm.
and then when it kicks in when you're in the air, if they have it on the flight, they have a ton of TV shows, movies,
wow.
documentaries that you can just watch right on your phone or your tablet or your computer, whatever you have. As long as you have it downloaded, it connects to their Wi-Fi, and boom, it's all free. It's really, really great. Wi-Fi costs money, though.
Yeah.
So that's kind of annoying. But if you want to watch movies or whatever, if they have it on the plane, it's cool. Now, if they don't have it installed yet, you got nothing to do. So bring your own entertainment. Have a book or
yeah,
have
exactly.
something to do on your phone or computer.
Well, you know,
make
like
sure it's
the
charged
kids,
up.
You bring the little DVD player, you know.
I think very few people are bringing the little DVD player anymore, Roger. I think that
Why?
Has passed.
Because really?
DVD players are bulky and everything is, you know, in like 5 years, you're not going to get DVDs anymore.
Oh,
everything is going to streaming.
Yeah, well, I believe exactly that because we're trying to make room in the place now.
Mm-hmm.
In our we're doing a lot of moving around of stuff mm-hmm. with families. And so I've got two shelf units in the front room with a ton of CDs, DVDs, and albums.
Yep.
And I just told my son, take all these DVDs and CDs and go to the secondhand shop and see what you can get for them. And I just, because we have Amazon Prime and Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't need most
of
that stuff.
Seriously.
Most of the DVDs you buy now, and I always look for this if we ever get a DVD, will come with a digital download. So you can have the DVD, but you can also download the movie to your tablet or whatever, so you then have it with you, which is a nice feature. All right, it's 3:30 in the morning. I got to take a quick break, and then for all you Trek fans out there, even if you're not a Trek fan, some interesting behind-the-scenes stories of Star Trek coming up next. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. We're trying to scare up Marcus Berkman, who is over in England. He's supposed to talk to us about his book, Set Phasers to Stun, which is very enjoyable. I had mentioned to Roger before the news that I think that DVDs will be gone in a few years. And a texter from 630 writes, I disagree about everything going to online streaming. It's getting harder and harder to maintain computer security. Apple TV recently announced vulnerabilities allowing intruders to access your system. Any device we add to our networks has the potential to become a Trojan and invite intruders into your network. Firewalls are set up with vampire permissions. The uninvited can't enter, but the mesmerized housemate can issue an invitation and let an intruder come and go freely. I still think that's where we're headed. Things are getting smaller. DVDs are big and bulky. Hard drives are going away. It's just too easy to get everything like that. I think that further securities are going to have to be, you know, yada yada, and people are always going to try to hack into things. Yeah. But I think for your movie stuff like that, it's going to go download because we're getting faster and faster with how you can download things. They're compressing things better. I mean, the fact that you can watch TV shows on Netflix as easily and quickly as you can is very telling. Roger, a show. So you do have Netflix. And Amazon Prime.
Yeah, my daughter has the Netflix, and mainly for the kids. She doesn't have much time to watch anything else. And then I got Amazon Prime for a whole number of reasons. But I'm the one who watches it. My wife gets it for the books.
Okay.
She's got a Kindle.
That's a good good marriage right there is what that is.
There you go.
Have you ever watched the TV show Lost?
Lost?
Yes.
No. I've seen parts of it when it was on Channel 7, ABC.
Right.
But I never got into
never
it.
Never got into it.
Never got into
so
it.
So it's funny. I don't know. I think it came out in 07. I could be wrong. Or 04. I think it was. Oh, God. I don't know what it was. We just started having kids, I think. Jack in 01, triplets in 05. So it was probably in a time of life where I just couldn't take on more. But I remember seeing the preview for it and this plane crash. I'm just fascinated by plane crashes. And so I always thought, God, I'm going to watch that show someday. I finally started watching that show. I'm about halfway through. But, you know, it was back in a time when we made 22 to 24 episodes a season. It's not like now where you're watching something on AMC or HBO that's 8 episodes and then you're done for a long time.
Right.
So it's 6 seasons of like 22 to 24 episodes each, so it's going to take a while, but I'm halfway through it, and it is really good. If you like science fiction-y type stuff at all, it's fascinating and very enjoyable. So I would highly recommend that when you get the chance, when you've got some time.
Jeez, when I have time.
Start watching some Lost.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump on the phone with our friend Marcus Berkman. The book is called Set Phasers to Stun. Hey, Marcus, good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it. I just got the book today on a PDF, and I've been reading it. And I got to confess, so Marcus, you're born just a little bit before me. I was born in 71. So for me, I was 5 and a half when Star Wars came out.
Yes.
And so Star Wars has been a constant throughout my life, and I just never got into. I've watched, you know, the old episodes, and I've watched some of the movies, but I'm not like a Trek guy. I'm not like, oh, I love Star Trek. I know it, I know of it, and I know its cultural significance, but it's just never been my thing.
Yes.
And you kind of had the same thing growing up in England, where kids were either kind of Star Trek or really Doctor Who probably was much more popular, but you were either kind of Star Trek or Doctor Who, right?
Yes, I think you are now. I think it's very much gone in that way. I mean, and obviously some people are Star Wars as well. And then others have got all three, I suppose, that some people go for everything.
Yeah. Are you amazed by how popular Doctor Who is right now? And I don't know if it is over there, but over here in the States, Doctor Who is insanely popular right now.
Yes. Well, it's still huge here. And, I mean, in our usual self-deprecating British way, we think, oh, can this go on for very much longer? You know, it's gone on for 50 years or slightly more, I think. It's now, 52 years. And we wonder whether Doctor Who will survive another year or two and fretting it in our usual way. But I have a feeling that, well, certainly Doctor Who, possibly Star Trek, and maybe Star Wars as well, will all be here long after we're all dead.
Well, it very well seems like it. Well, with Doctor Who, and I've never watched Doctor Who, I have relatives who love that show, and I've bought Doctor Who gifts for people, but I've never sat down and watched it. So explain to me, there's different Doctor Whos. As the years go on, they replace the Doctor, and then do they retell the same stories, or is it always new stories, and is it just, oh, this is now the new Doctor Who, or is it explain? Oh, I'm sorry. My newsman is freaking out that I don't know any of this, Marcus, so he's looking at me like, what is wrong with you that you don't know about Doctor Who? It just wasn't my thing.
I know.
I haven't had a chance yet. So explain to me, though, how Doctor Who works, and Roger, you can jump in too. Is it always like just we replace the actor, now this is Doctor Who, or do they explain how it changed from one person to the next?
They do both. So they change the Doctor Who when whichever Doctor wants to go off and do other things. And then they sort of reboot because it's quite a clever thing. I suppose Doctor Who invented the reboot before anybody else did because you start telling different stories. The thing about Doctor Who and the difference between that and the others is that Doctor Who is essentially circular. You always come round to the same things. It's nothing actually really changes. So you tell a big story, and then at some point the Daleks will come in, and at another point the entire universe will be threatened, and then eventually you come back to where you are. And in the same way that every episode of The Simpsons starts and ends in essentially the same place. Nothing actually really happens, and that's the secret of Doctor Who. Star Trek is different in that it's actually a story. It's a huge, great sort of meta story, just surging forwards over the decades. But Doctor Who that's the way Doctor Who was constructed. I mean, how they're doing it now, I'm not quite sure, but I think that's basically what they're doing.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Star Trek. You cover the various series and some of the movies in the book, but the parts I'm in so far, and I think the bulk of the book, is about the original series, how it came to be, and what it was, because it really was culturally significant in many ways. First off, it changed sci-fi on television, right? Nothing like this had been created, at least here in the U.S., up to that point, right?
That's fair enough, because before Star Trek, and Star Trek was the first, unless you count things things like The Twilight Zone and Outer Limits, which were just little playlets, but a proper actually running science fiction series hadn't really existed like that before. You had those Irwin Allen shows of our childhood, Lost in Space and Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea and Land of the Giants, which were essentially children's series. I mean, they were shown at prime time, but they were basically for kids. And Star Trek was a much more grown-up series. It was a little morality play every week. Well, not all of them, but many of them were. And it was a much more serious show.
But you also write that one of the big differences between, say, Twilight Zone and Outer Limits, and maybe even Lost in Space, is the way Star Trek looked at things is the future was a good place,
yes.
Not always fraught with, oh, my God, you know, the world is terrible. We have to escape it. It was going out and searching for better things and for good things with a more optimistic attitude, right?
That's absolutely right. Science fiction is a gloomy old genre. It tends to talk about the future as an appalling place where everything has gone terribly wrong. And Star Trek suggested, revolutionary in its way, that the future, actually, we were going to have sorted everything out, that, illness and disease and war and money and even television would have been abolished, and that, we would be living in some sort of earthly paradise and then going out and exploring the galaxy. And this was extraordinary. And in a way, it is still extraordinary because nothing else has quite like it has come up ever since, which is, I think, one of the reasons that Star Trek has survived is that it still has fundamentally that quite optimistic thought about the future.
When we think about Star Trek, do you think of it, it's so culturally significant in that it's had this staying power and it's still thought about, and all these other things were created after it. But I don't know, and I'd ask you, if we think about it in terms of quality, the way that we'll talk about, like I just brought up the TV show Lost, or a TV show Twin Peaks, or Mad Men, or The Sopranos, which kind of changed television in ways because of their quality or because of their innovative abilities. Is Star Trek the same thing? Because I think of Star Trek as a little more schlocky.
Well, possibly. But the thing is that when we're looking at the original series, we've got to look at it in the context of what else was on in 1967, 8, 9. It changed things in that respect. And then some of the later series, because, of course, when it came back as The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise, those series weren't they weren't networks. They were straight to syndication. And so they were slightly the secret you were there to do, you had to discover for yourself. And because science fiction has always been rather looked down on by sort of mainstream telly, they didn't get any, they were nominated for the odd Emmy Award, but they never got any. They were never really given any awards for anything. They were never really acknowledged. And yet, it's the influence of those shows has very much bled into the primetime television of today. I think something like Lost would not necessarily have happened without some of the Star Treks. You know what I mean? Is the sort of science fiction, as well as there being lots of science fiction actual shows on telly, it's also bled into the other genres as well. There's science fiction in everything now, and that's its main influence.
One of the innovations of Star Trek at the time was the blending of races, as well as strong women women in strong positions of leadership. Yeah. Whether or not they get a lot of airtime or not is different, but on the Starship Enterprise, there was a black woman who was, one of the leaders of the crew, and that was revolutionary at the time, I would assume.
It was totally revolutionary. And, there's a famous story of Whoopi Goldberg when she was a little girl going, rushing into the kitchen saying, "Mama, Mama, there's a black woman on the TV and she's not a maid." and then she took a part in The Next Generation as her way of saying thank you, because this was important to her, because Nichelle Nichols, playing Uhura, admittedly, she didn't have enough to do, and in the way of the 1960s, she was always wearing a very, very short skirt.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, she was in a position of responsibility, and this was a glorious thing, actually. If we think about it in retrospect, it is a glorious thing.
Roddenberry has, definitely sexual undertones in the shows, and women in really short skirts. Was he, how do we categorize him? Was that just, that's just the time we're in? Or even though there's all these great qualities about him, there was still a bit of sexism in the show. How do you look back on that and judge it?
Well, I think we all look back with a certain amount of, wry humor, because I think that's who he was. Whenever the costume designer of the time, he would present one of the female guest stars in some, relatively skimpy costume, Roddenberry would always say, "Shorter, Bill, shorter." because that's what he liked, and he was something of a ladies' man, professionally and in an amateur way as well. So that was his interest, and it's very interesting. It's remarkable how many stories, both in the original Star Trek and in the first couple of seasons of The Next Generation, when he was very hands-on there, there are lots of sex stories. There's lots of, and whereas, of course, when other people take over the show, there's less of that. It's clearly a great interest of his.
Well, and you write in the book that even in the very first original pilot that was shot, he cast as one of the lead female characters a woman he was having an affair with.
And of course, she turned up. Then she became later his wife. But that was Majel Barrett Roddenberry. She then became, who was number one in the pilot, the sort of Spock archetype, if you like. Spock took over that role, and then she turned up in the original series as Nurse Christine Chapel. So he always found a role for her. And then actually, she turned up in The Next Generation in a guest role. I mean, she was terrific. No taking that away from her. And she was very much a keeper of the flame after he died. But nonetheless, yes, he made sure that there was room for his main squeeze.
Yeah, the original. It's interesting reading about the original pilot and what happened. So the only cast member, so they shoot a pilot for NBC, and Roddenberry himself was an L.A. cop who wanted to write. He got into writing, wrote for a bunch of different shows, things like that, but knew that the real money was in producing your own show. Had several pilots that never made it past the pilot stage in the first shooting, but gets it approved with some help from friends and some ideas from friends, because he'd never been a sci-fi guy.
No.
But you know, pitched a show in one way that it was like basically like a Zeppelin that would fly to place on Earth, right, and discover new lands.
That was his original idea. Was he was going to set it at the end of the 19th century and have a dirigible flying around to places unexplored with a multiracial cast. I mean, you can see why that wasn't made, can't you? But nonetheless, it's only a jump or two, an imaginative
jump.
Yeah,
basically, they put it on a spaceship and said, how about now? And somebody said, oh, okay, well, that's different, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So they shoot the pilot, and NBC actually really likes it, but decide not to do it for various reasons. They recast just about everybody, except for Mr. Spock, played by Leonard Nimoy, although the NBC did want him replaced, and that character changed, right?
They did. They didn't like his pointy ears, and they didn't like his eyebrows. They didn't like the fact that he was green-skinned and therefore alien. And they were worried about the Bible Belt. They thought that people would think that he was in some way something to do with the devil. And they just this was the sales guys. They were the ones who worried. The sort of more creative guys were less worried. So there was a sort of argument with NBC about how this was going to happen. But Gene Roddenberry said, you know, no, I'm afraid Spock stays because he's a really good character. And obviously, as we know, he turned out possibly to be the crucial character.
Yeah, really. Shatner getting cast as the captain makes a big difference. The show is only on for 3 years, though. Why does it get canceled after 3 years? Are the ratings bad, or are there problems with Roddenberry? How does it go away so fast?
Well, there are lots of reasons for it, really. I suppose that the main one is that the ratings in the 60s were a very blunt instrument. It was just about delivering the numbers, and Star Trek never quite delivered the numbers. If you'd had a slightly more complicated, a more subtle way of measuring the ratings, they'd have noticed that this was attracting a young audience and predominantly an upmarket audience, the sort of audience that advertisers want to have. But the actual real solid numbers, it wasn't delivering. So, you know, ratings are much more sophisticated now, and Star Trek would have survived. But I think there's also another reason, which is that we look at TV series now, and they've got, you know, they've got producers, and they've got line producers, and they've got executive and supervising and consultant producers and co-executive producers. They've got huge teams of people working on this stuff, and some of them are actually producing the show, making sure it goes out, and the others are writers. They have lots and lots of writers on staff. Now, Star Trek had basically four people doing all of this, writing and producing it, and they were producing 25, 26, 28 episodes a year, and they burnt out. And, you know, they used people up very quickly. It was a new show which had new ideas, and you needed to have the best people working on it. And the very best people who were working on the show in the first, say, couple of years left because they were burnt out. And the people who replaced them weren't quite so good. And the quality fell. And it's obviously a much longer story than that. But
yeah.
the third season is pretty poor. And so you couldn't really defend, if it wasn't getting the numbers on, the pure numbers, it's also the quality had gone down. And Leonard Nimoy himself said, you know, at the end of the third season, it was pretty much a relief to give up because we thought that the fourth season would have been even worse. Mm. And then we would have been back down into Irwin Allen territory. And then it's pretty likely the show would never have come back in the way that it did.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. It left people wanting more because it hadn't fallen quite that far. The book is called Set Phasers to Stun. Unfortunately, we're just out of time. I got to get to the news here in a minute. But Marcus Berkman, I'd love to have you back another time and get more into the story. It's fascinating. Set Phasers to Stun. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone. It's the Matt Bubala Show, Radio 720, WGN. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll jump on the phone with Dr. Jason Steffen, the astrophysicist who used to work here at Fermilab. He's part of the Kepler mission. He's trying to find habitable planets in outer space, millions of light years away. We'll ask him about this alleged Planet 9 that supposedly maybe is actually out there and whether or not it might kill us all later this month. Bruce Springsteen, I think we mentioned this earlier, Roger, canceled a show in North Carolina.
Right.
There's been a lot of controversy in North Carolina because they've passed a law called HB2. A lot of the kerfluffle has been about bathrooms. You know what I don't understand about the bathroom thing? So let's think about this. So there's transgender people.
Mm-hmm.
And the law says if you were born a man, use the men's room.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're born a lady with lady parts, use the ladies' room. I don't care what you've been through, you're not coming into my bathroom. You weren't born with those parts. So, in theory, what we're saying then is, in North Carolina, what they want to happen is a man who's gone through gender reassignment surgery and is now a rockin' hot woman,
right,
needs to go into the men's room. So picture this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You were born a man,
mm-hmm.
but you've had the surgery, mm-hmm. and now you're rocking heels, mm-hmm. and a skirt, and you've mm-hmm. got awesome everything.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you know, you wouldn't know. You'd say, why is that hot woman walking into the men's room? This is what they're saying they want to happen. They're saying you can't use the bathroom that you've been, you know, after surgery. You have to use. So think about this. I'm a man in the washroom, and now this hot woman comes in,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to go, okay, this is odd. Or some guy who looks like a guy but was born a woman is now walking into the woman's room.
Right.
I don't see them saying, yes, that's how we want it. I see that being a big problem in North Carolina. I mean, think about it. I was born a woman, but mm-hmm. now I'm a man, mm-hmm. and I look like a man.
I should use the men's.
And I'm walking into the ladies' room now because that's your law.
Right.
What woman is going to be in there going, dude, what are you doing in here? They're not going to go along. They're not, sorry, that's your law.
They're going to go screaming.
They're going to scream and run out.
But then again, when you got to go.
But I don't think they fully thought this through.
I don't imagine
it was ever an issue. Well, they did.
They did to a point, which was the point they wanted to stop thinking about it.
So Bruce
I'm sorry, I just editorialized.
No, I appreciate it. Bruce Springsteen released the statement that said, as you, my fans, know, I'm scheduled to play in Greensboro, North Carolina this Sunday. As we also know, North Carolina has just passed HB2, which the media are referring to as the bathroom law. HB2, known officially as the Public Facilities Privacy and Security Act, dictates which bathrooms transgender people are permitted to use. Just as important, the law also attacks the rights of LGBT citizens to sue when their human rights are violated in the workplace. No other group of North Carolinians faces such a burden. To my mind, it's an attempt by people who cannot stand the progress our country has made in recognizing the human rights of all of our citizens to overturn that progress. Right now, there are many groups, businesses, and individuals in North Carolina working to oppose and overcome these negative developments. Taking all of this into account, I feel that this is a time for me and the band to show solidarity for those freedom fighters. As a result, and with deepest apologies to our dedicated fans in Greensboro, we've canceled our show scheduled for Sunday, April 10th. Some things are more important than a rock show, and this fight against prejudice and bigotry, which is happening as I write, is one of them. It is the strongest means I have for raising my voice in opposition to those who continue to push us backwards instead of forwards. So Bruce took that stand. Somebody else pulled out a big service center out of North Carolina this week. I can't remember who it was, if it was PayPal or somebody else. And there's a lot of push for the NBA to rescind the All-Star game that I think is supposed to be there next year. So it'll be interesting to keep following that.
Here's the second step on that Springsteen thing. Mm-hmm. He's refunding all the tickets.
Well, of course he is.
That's,
he's not going to stick it to his fans.
It's not like Janet Jackson, who canceled her tour because of doctor's orders and is not supposedly giving the money back.
Well, they have to refund the money if they cancel the. There's always a refund if you cancel a concert. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you, Janet Jackson is not keeping all that money. There's no way that works. That's a lot of lawsuits headed her way if she does that. And I heard, is this not true? You said doctor's orders. I thought she's in a family way.
Well, and that's what the doctor's orders were.
Isn't Janet like over 50?
She's on the upside of being too old.
What you're going to call a high-risk pregnancy,
yeah,
right there.
Very so high risk.
Good luck to Janet. I hope that all turned out well for her. All right. We're going to talk about planets in our own backyard that we don't even know about and whether or not they could kill us. It's the Matt Bubala Show on WGN Radio, joined by my favorite, I can't remember, can I call you an astrophysicist, Jason? Is that fair? Is that right? Is that wrong?
Yeah, that's the right term.
Okay, hold on. Welcome back to the Matt Bubala Show on WGN Radio, joined now by our favorite astrophysicist, Jason Steffen, formerly of Fermilab and Northwestern here in Chicago, now living the good life out west in Las Vegas. He's an associate professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at UNLV. Hey, Jason, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
We're doing good. By the way, real quick, before we get into the technical stuff, you moved, I want to say, you're originally from Utah, so you're used to hot and dry, but you moved back to Vegas. Was it in the fall that you guys moved?
No, it was actually July 2nd.
It was. Okay. So how was that first summer being? How was August back in Las Vegas? Was it like easy enough, or were you like, oh my God, I forgot how bad this is?
No, I actually quite liked it. We'll see how this coming summer goes. If I can do 3 months of that kind of weather instead of just two.
Well, but you're always welcome to
come. It meant that you can go outside at night and it's still hot, so you feel like, I don't know, you're in a sauna all the time.
Yeah.
A very dry sauna.
A dry one. Will you take that over a July night in Chicago where it's maybe only 84 degrees, but you're still sweating versus a 90 degree night where you're not sweating?
Well, the main difference between where we live now and where we lived before is the bugs. There are far fewer bugs in Las Vegas than there were in Chicago. Okay.
And do you ever, I know that you spend your career looking at planets, millions of light years away, but now that you're in an area where if you drive for like an hour, you can pretty much get away from light pollution, do you ever go out and do that?
I haven't. I don't really do much nighttime viewing because I've been away from it for so long. It turns out, though, that you can actually see from a major telescope, you can see the lights of Las Vegas in Arizona. We're that good at polluting the light from our
There's a telescope industry. I'm trying to figure this out. There's a telescope in Arizona that can see the lights from Las Vegas by, like, looking up in the sky, the light that's polluting the sky. They're not looking down on actual Las Vegas because they're on the ground too, right?
Right. Light. Las Vegas throws a bunch of stuff in the sky, and if there's any clouds near Las Vegas, it will scatter across the sky, and they can see the effects on some of the bigger instruments.
Well, that's interesting. Okay.
So,
but that's
we do our job very well. If we're going to do it, we might as well go.
If you're going to pollute the sky, do it all out. Yes, absolutely. Good. Go Vegas. All right. So let's talk now. I called you up today because it's tax season, and I'm supposed to be filling out my taxes. I'm supposed to be paying my taxes. But then, Jason, I saw this report on the internet that there's this planet called Planet Nine, and it's this mysterious planet that has always been rumored to be out there but hasn't been. But now we supposedly found it. And then other people, Jason, are saying that this planet is why we have an extinction event about every 20, 27 million years on Earth. And so this planet, when it orbits, goes through the Kuiper Belt and starts dispersing all these asteroids and meteors, and they're going to come crashing down on Earth, as possibly as soon as April, and destroy us all. And so I'm sitting here with my TurboTax out thinking, well, do I really want to spend all night doing this, or should I watch another episode of the OJ thing? Because if we're all going to die, I don't want to pay those taxes. So I just thought that maybe you'd, reassure me that I'm cool with not doing the taxes.
I think I should probably reassure you that you're not going to die from something happening before taxes are due. So I would highly recommend following the statutes of the nation and submitting your tax returns on time.
So what stories went wrong here? Let's go step by step. Is there a ninth planet that's been mysteriously hiding from us for all these years?
We don't actually know. So it's possible that that there's a ninth planet. There's some evidence that suggests that a ninth planet could be there. This evidence is that there are a number of small bodies that we've observed out way past the orbit of Pluto that have a peculiar alignment of their orbits, an alignment that would be that you could produce if there was a ninth planet kind of driving them into those particular orbits. So there's some circumstantial evidence that there's a Planet Nine. It is very far from definitive that it's there. So it's certainly worthwhile looking for it. It's certainly worthwhile, scanning the skies and seeing if we can see something like that. It's not something that I would not personally write a headline that said, Planet Nine discovered.
Not yet. Okay. But I don't understand you, Jason. Your job is to look at planets that are habitable
or habitable, right? How do we say that?
Habitable,
light years away, millions of light years away. You're finding planets. But there's one in our backyard that we're not sure is there. How did that one slip by us?
The main reason is that stars are brighter than planets. So when we study, when we detect planets orbiting distant stars, we're actually studying the stars themselves and seeing the effects of the planets on those stars. And so, like when one planet orbits and we measure the Doppler shift of that planet, we're actually measuring the Doppler shift of the star due to its response to the orbiting planet. If we see, like with Kepler, we see a planet transiting the star, we're looking at the star and we're watching the planet go in front and we're seeing the planet block some of the light from the star. Stars are far brighter than the planets themselves. There's only a very, very small handful of planets where we've actually seen the light coming from the planet. So in the case of this hypothetical Planet 9, and I'm not making a judgment about whether it's there or not. I think it's reasonable that it could be there, but I'm not going to dive into the any scientific debate about its possibility. But the but Planet 9, if it exists, is way, way, way out there, and it might not reflect very much light. So any light that the sun that reflects off it from the sun has to go, first of all, way out there in the first place, then reflect and come back to the Earth, and it would be something that would be very dim and wouldn't be particularly noteworthy in the surveys that we've done of the stars in the sky.
So basically, as a layman, which I am, could we just say sort of like, it's so close to home, our sun is so bright, that if something is circling so far on the edges of our solar system, it's possible for us to miss it because it's blocked by other things, and because its orbit is so long that it only comes into easier view at certain points? Something along those lines?
Well, that's part of it. The other thing is that it could be almost anywhere in the sky. And so to find it, you have to look everywhere. Where if you're looking at a star... if you're looking at a planet orbiting a distant star, you just study that one star and you can see if you find a planet orbiting it. And you don't have to look across the whole sky. You can cherry pick. I want to look at 100 stars randomly and I might see planets orbiting 30 of them. So you keep monitoring the 100 stars and then eventually you'll find something. Where when you're talking about something in the solar system, it could be almost anywhere in the sky. And so you're looking at a very, very tiny signal from one single object across the whole of the sky. And it's a much more difficult, it takes a very different observing strategy to find something that's part of the solar system than to find something that's part of an extra solar system.
Why is this in the news this week? Why am I seeing this in the news this week? Is there something about this Planet 9 or Planet X that's out there? Was some discovery made?
No, not that I know of. There have been a number of people who have started given this prediction that Planet 9 should be there, I wonder what other things we could say about it. And so there's, you know, that's kind of the job of a theorist is to take an idea and run with it and see what other predictions you can make, because you want to be able to make predictions that you can then test to verify whether the theory or the hypothesis is correct in the first place. And so I suspect that there have been other papers that have come out recently that discuss it, and therefore it kind of keeps it in the headlines.
All right. We're talking with Jason Steffen. He's an astrophysicist at UNLV. When we come back, so suppose it is out there, suppose we find it, is it possible that something like this could cause a mass extinction event? Is there a possibility that something does send waves of comets or meteors headed our way once every however many millions of years? We'll ask that question next. Matt Bubala with you here, Radio 720 WGN.
I could stay awake just to hear you breathing.
It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN, talking to our favorite astrophysicist, Jason Steffen. He's a professor at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He debunked much of what I was talking about as we started this, that maybe we're all going to die and I shouldn't pay my taxes. He says, go ahead, pay your taxes. You'll feel better about it. Especially if we don't die. That's the tough part about it, is if you don't die, then you're in trouble with the law, too, and all that stuff. So you don't need that. So go ahead and pay it, because what does it matter anyways? If we're all going to die, what's it matter if you still had the $3,000 in your bank account? It doesn't really make any sense. So you've got a good point there, Jason. I'll go ahead and pay the taxes. However, suppose this Planet 9, Planet X, whatever it is out there, whether we find it or not. Is it possible, I mean, I don't know where we're at with the latest science. Is the most common theory and the most believed theory, Jason, that the dinosaurs were wiped out by a massive collision with Earth?
Yeah, but it wouldn't have been the collision itself that wiped out the dinosaurs. The mass, so you have a comet that comes in, hits the Earth. It's not the impact itself. The mass of the comet is like 1/1,000,000,000 of the mass of the Earth.
Okay.
And so it's not something like the Earth was shaking all over the place, but rather it spews a bunch of stuff into the atmosphere, changes the climate, and then the Earth is no longer habitable for the species that are on it. So it's climate change that killed off the dinosaurs. It's climate change that was induced by this collision with the comet.
And
I don't know that it was much consolation for the dinosaurs to realize that they weren't responsible for their own demise, but that's what happened.
We don't know if they felt better in the end. None of the fossils seem to have smiley faces.
It's not my fault. It's not my fault.
Yeah. So it spews all this stuff into the air, which then changes. You said climate change, but is it that the atmosphere becomes so clouded or unbreathable because of the dust of this, or the sun can't get through? Is it one of those things, or did it actually change it to temperatures all day that were conducive to them, to the lakes froze or the lakes dried out or something along those lines?
So I don't know the details, but what I believe or what I understand happened is that you throw up a bunch of material into the sky, and it can, when you affect the climate, you can either raise or lower the temperature of the Earth. Initially, it probably lowered the temperature. The same thing happens when you get a large volcanic eruption, that it initially lowers the temperature. And as a consequence, you get plants can't grow where they've been living. And that's the real threat with climate change, is that you can't grow the food that you normally would be able to. If you can't grow corn in Iowa, then a lot of things change. Mm. And so when the food supply disappears, then things start to die off.
So it's very possible that
that's typically the issue that you come across with climate change, is that the temperature changes, the plants that are used to living in a particular environment can't live there anymore, they die off, and then everything, the rest of the food chain relies on that.
So it's very possible, and I know this isn't your area, but it's possible that the dinosaurs really survived this event, but just over time, it altered the Earth in such a way that their food sources weren't there, or the climate wasn't conducive to them anymore, things like that.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. Good to know. However, if, say, this planet does this type of thing, if this planet's out there, or for whatever reason we suddenly have an event, can events, you know, I always thought when we think about that extinction event that it was some random asteroid or comet or who knows what that collided with Earth. But the interesting theory to me was that this planet, when it comes by and passes close to the sun, goes through our asteroid belt and then knocks a bunch of things off and hurtling towards Earth. Is that a theory that could be possible as to why we would have extinction events on some sort of regular basis? And do we have regular extinction events? Has that happened multiple times throughout Earth as far as scientists know?
We do have extinction events that happen periodically. I don't know. I don't know that they're regular. There's a lot of randomness associated with them. All of the extinction events, the one that killed off the dinosaurs wasn't the largest. There was one that they call the Great Dying, where something like 95% of all the life on the planet was wiped out, again, due to climate change. And maybe the cockroaches survived, but hardly anything else did. So that's the real concern. It's not that these things happen regularly, like every time the planets and stars align in a particular way, it's going to knock a single comet that's going to hit the Earth. But rather, you have some object out there that can stir up trouble, and eventually you get something that comes closer to the inner solar system. We don't actually know, since we don't know the orbit of Planet 9, we don't know what reservoir of potentially life destroying comets it can perturb. So we have objects in the Kuiper Belt. We have objects in the Oort cloud. The Kuiper Belt is, as the name implies, it's a belt of material outside the orbit of Neptune. The Oort cloud is a spherical distribution of comets that's much farther away and is in all directions. And so depending upon the orbit of Planet 9, if it exists, it would periodically come through into these regions and perturb things. It really just needs to get it into the inner solar system so that, say, Jupiter or Saturn can start perturbing it again and change its orbit to come in towards the Earth. Typically, you don't get, my understanding is that you typically don't get interactions way out in the distance that will take you from living by yourself out in the Oort cloud to all of a sudden coming in and hitting the Earth, but that you go through stages where your orbit will cross.
So it's a little pinball-like. You get moved around by certain things, and eventually you get where you're going.
Yeah, and eventually you get down to where you can cause problems on the Earth. So it's possible that if this Planet 9 exists, that it's responsible for stirring up some of the objects that have come in and either caused mass extinctions or caused collisions on other planets. It's also possible that these things happen just from stars passing by the solar system. That there's a bunch of stars in the galaxy. They're all swimming past each other, and those can also produce perturbations to the orbit that then send things in towards the inner solar system.
Okay, so if we do have one of these events, what it sounds like you're saying, because I always grew up, you know, we grew up with the threat of nuclear war, things like that, where it was always basically the world would come to an end. It sounds like, though, that you would guess that if we have one of these events, it could be very catastrophic for Earth, but not, and maybe an extinction event, but not a 1 second we're here, the next second we're gone. It sounds like an apocalyptic, that Fallout video game thing where every, you know, a lot of people die, a lot of people, but it's more famine, pestilence, fires, no water, things like that, where we're trying to survive like some movie.
Yeah, it's kind of a train wreck in super slow motion. It certainly won't be pleasant to watch or to be part of. The main thing, along with this kind of stuff, you know, things coming in, near-Earth asteroids that can cross the Earth's orbit, or comets that can come in and you know, wipe us all out. The real concern is not the big objects, because those we can see. And it's not really the smallest objects, because those don't cause an important effect. It's the ones in the middle, the ones that are too small to detect easily, but large enough to cause problems. And so one of the components of some of the existing and planned all-sky astronomical surveys, such as PanSTARRS is running right now. It's a set of telescopes in Hawaii that takes a picture of the sky all the time. But also LSST, which is planned for the end of the decade. Part of their scientific mission is to identify, so they're more sensitive cameras, they can see dimmer objects, is to identify asteroids that could potentially hit the Earth. And it's not as though these things are going to come from out of the blue and hit us and then we're done for. It's rather that over a period of time, it may be that 20,000 years from now, this thing has the potential to hit the Earth. And if you have a 20,000-year baseline, then you can start, you know, then you can imagine realistic scenarios where you manipulate that object's orbit enough that it won't hit the Earth anymore.
You know, we sometimes hear about, 2 weeks from now, something's going to come dangerously close. And it's really still, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles away, but it's still what would be called a near miss. Is it possible in your mind ever that scientists suddenly say, holy cow, we just found something out, it's going to hit us in 2 weeks? Or we, well, I guess technologically enough advanced that we're scanning things enough that nothing's going to give us some crazy surprise like that?
Well, we are often still surprised. Certainly in the not too distant past, most of the near misses were found after they'd already gone by rather than before. The reason being that they pass by the Earth, one of the reasons possibly being that they pass by the Earth and they're closer to the sun, so they're brighter and we can see them easier.
Okay.
I don't know that there's much there's certainly not much to be concerned about. This is not a problem to lose sleep over.
Okay.
It's worthwhile to invest in identifying where these objects are and where they might be in the future. But there are certainly other ways to die that are much more likely coming forward.
Well, I guess
it's a typical time scale between extinction events is numbered in millions of years.
Right.
Then it's not going to happen tomorrow, and it's not going to happen before the 15th.
You don't know that. You don't know that, because how many millions of years has it been?
You're right. I don't know that for sure. So I'll say if it turns out that that the comet does hit the Earth and wipe out all of civilization before tax day, and you don't pay your taxes, then I'll take you out to dinner.
Sounds good. I'll take you up on that. And real quick, just one last thing. So I love that you guys are all looking, and there's all sorts of things set up to see if anything's going to come near Earth, and et cetera, et cetera. But when the scientists do say, hey, thank God we're here. We figured it out. We have 2 months until this asteroid hits Earth and kills us all. Who do they turn that information over to, and then what is done with it? Like, do we have plans that we don't know about? The governments get together and they launch a nuclear warhead, something like that, to knock it out of the way? Or do we just go, wow, 2 months till we die, let's not pay our taxes?
That I actually don't know. I suspect that because in that case, it's kind of a national security issue. And so I think the Defense Department would be the place that has, protocols in place for such disasters.
Sure.
I do know, my understanding is, I don't know off the top of my head, but my understanding is that, say, the Air Force is actually funding a portion of, or that either the Air Force or the Navy are funding a portion of these all-sky surveys because it is a national security threat, and so they can, it's part of their mission.
So that would lead you to think that they kind of have a plan then, right?
They may have a plan, but I still think that the most common scenario would be, look, here's this thing that's coming. We have 1,000 years. We got to do something about it. What can we do? We'll go spray paint it with something so that the radiation pressure from the sun will move its orbit by some small amount that eventually 1,000 years from now makes it so that it misses us by a large margin. I don't think that sending a bunch of oilmen up there to drill a hole in an asteroid to stick the nuclear weapon in and having it blow the thing to smithereens is not a realistic solution.
Listen, just because you don't like the movie doesn't mean you got to go discrediting.
No, the movie was great, right? I mean, they sang, jet plane and everything. So, but it might make a good movie. Although there are some physics issues related to the their flight pattern, but
I would imagine.
But it's not a realistic scenario to, to save the world.
Well, Jason, an unrealistic scenario is you giving us 1,000 years notice and we just go, hey, that's good. All right, let's go spray paint. That'll go out of the way. No, what we do is argue about it for 500 years, put it off, delay funding, and then we freak out.
And then send the people out there to drill a hole in it and blow it up with a nuclear
weapon. You're forgetting how much we like to blow things up. If you scientists came to Washington and said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to spray paint it, and then the Earth will move it for us. They're going to go, please, we are blowing that thing up. You watch. That's going to create jobs, Jason. That's what we got to do. Two guys spray painting is not a 300 million ton bomb that somebody's got to build. Come on. You know how the government works.
Hey, we might need a special kind of spray paint. there's other things you could do too. Like you could attach a rocket to it and have when you have 1,000 orbits or 10,000 orbits, a small perturbation will add up very quickly over time.
Let me just tell you that if you're in charge of selling it to Congress, don't go in just with the spray paint. At some point, say, and then it goes boom. Something like that to get them excited, okay? I'm just saying. Jason Steffen is an astrophysicist at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, where he's a professor. He doesn't get out much in the dark, even though he lives out there, but he enjoys not having the bugs. Thank you so much for being with us, as always, Jason.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Sorry, everybody. Better fire that TurboTax back up. Matt Bubala with you here. Radio 720 WGN. I do like this song a lot. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. Just about to wrap things up. I'll be back with you at 2 a.m. next week. Mike Steven is coming up in a little bit with Outside the Loop Radio. And then Sweet Lou Manfredini will be with you as always. But our very own Max Armstrong joins us in just a moment. Real quick, if you're a fan of The Walking Dead, Shantae, do you watch The Walking Dead at all? She watches The Walking Dead. Okay, good. So it ended the season that just ended last week with a big cliffhanger. This character from the graphic novels, Negan, was finally introduced after we'd heard about him all season long. Negan is introduced, and Negan carries around this bat that appears to be wrapped with barbed wire. He's pretty much a bad guy. And like a whole group of the Walking Dead regulars were caught by Negan's people. And Negan plays a game of eeny, meeny, miny, moe to decide which one of them he's going to kill to teach them a lesson. And Negan has this bat he calls Lucille that he walks around with, and this is how the cliffhanger ends. He goes eeny, meeny, miny, moe with all the people, and then he starts bashing the brains in of one of them. But we don't know which one. We won't find out till next season. Steven Yeun, who plays Glenn on the show, who is a fan favorite, is apparently, I had no idea until today, a huge Detroit Red Wings fan. He was one of the cast members who was on their knees, subject to this eeny, meeny, miny, moe game before Negan decided who to kill. Steven Yeun and the Red Wings were playing the Flyers this week. And so Steven Yeun on Twitter wrote, "Let's go at Detroit Red Wings," and then a bunch of clapping hands. The Philadelphia Flyers decided to troll Steven for doing that because they were playing the Red Wings. And they wrote back, "Let's go Lucille." Lucille being the bat that just killed one of them. And they're hoping now it's him. I thought that was brilliant. I love a good Twitter trolling. Sometimes they're very, very witty. That got 7,800 likes, by the way.
What?
Well, he cheered on his team. The Flyers of all teams, what the perfect team, the Broad Street Bullies,
yeah,
to cheer on mayhem.
Oh, of course.
He says, yeah, "Let's go Red Wings." They say, "Let's go Lucille." Yeah.
Lucille, that's... what's his name's guitar?
Yes, that was B.B. King's guitar.
Yeah.
B.B. passed away, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you name it? Oh, all right, never mind. It's TV.
About Lucille? I don't know. We'd have to read the graphic novel. In other great news,
yeah,
Roger, earlier this week, WGN Radio announced its 2016 class for the Walk of Fame.
That is so true, and what a class it is.
Seven new honorees, Floyd Brown, Jim Carollo, Dan Fabian, Marilyn Miller, Tom Peterson, and Dean Richards. Oh, and our very own rascal, Mr. Max Armstrong. Good morning, Max.
Good morning, you two rascals. I've enjoyed very much, Matt, the apocalypse hour here. What the heck? You don't think we have enough to worry about? The newscast scare you enough?
Here's the thing. We have a ton to worry about, but if we just worry about this, we could forget about all the rest.
All right. I'm sorry, pal. That didn't do anything to lift my spirits over Trump and Hillary and Bernie and the rich of the GOP bunch.
Maybe these are all signs, Max, that the impending doom is coming.
I want to tell you, has me run into the good book a little more often. That's for sure. And you just set me off, pal.
Well, the earth is going to have to stick around a little while longer because we need to see you and all your classmates inducted into the Walk of Fame. Max, I worked with everybody on this list here except for Dan Fabian. Dan was already retired when I got here. I got here in 97. I produced John Williams till 2007. I got to work with all of you guys.
Oh, my goodness. You missed the memo fairy. Okay.
Yes, I heard that he was called the memo fairy.
He was.
But I've interviewed Dan because of the Go Cubs Go song and things like that. But what a fun event this is going to be this year. I'm so excited for you guys.
You know, what'll be neat is the opportunity to see folks I have not seen in quite some time.
Yeah.
I just haven't been, you know, in the station when Steve and Johnny have been around. They're going to be driving up from Florida.
Excellent.
I heard from them, and I heard from Kathy O'Malley immediately. I mean, she must be just hanging on every tweet and Facebook posting, because she was all over it.
Kathy is very tuned in. She is very tuned in. Well, I think the big controversy here, Max, is Bertrand got in last year, and I don't know who he paid off or why he got in ahead of you, because it's, please.
Well, let's face it. The dogs in the neighborhood will have a head start on his plaque.
That's a good way to look at it. Yes.
Good year to tarnish his before they get to mine.
Well, I think, I forget who it was. One of the, Dean Richards actually posted on Facebook today that a viewer, I think at Channel 9, suggested to him that we combine our Walk of Fame program with the Chicago Pothole Repair Program.
That's good.
And then we're
like
really
that.
Serving the community. This is an all-service station, Max. I think, you know, there's a way for us to serve the community.
That does hold promise. that really does make sense, especially when you see some of those streets on the north side. You just bounce down through there. Well, they make my gravel road look good.
Are you thinking about your speech yet, Max? Will you prepare something very thoughtful?
Listen,
and,
pal.
You know?
I've been programmed to 30 and 60 seconds all of these years, and it won't take me long.
You're gonna hit the tone,
aren't you? You're not the auditorium here, pal.
Oh, well.
No, I thought it was going to be like a speech from the Mary Tyler Moore show.
Oh, a little song?
It all started at a little 5-watt station, and, you know.
I thought you were going with the Chuckles the Clown episode.
No,
I think
no,
Max
no.
gets up there, yeah, and he says, a little song, a little dance, a little seltzer down your pants.
There you go.